I wanted to start this morning giving you a brief quiz that I think everyone can pass. What do Charles the Bald, Louis the Fat, and Vlad the Impaler have in common? Their middle names. Yes. The. The is not a common middle name anymore. A lot of people would like to have it, but we don't get titles like that. I think the other thing they have in common is they all have really rotten titles. Yeah. You don't want to be remembered for being bald or fat or an impaler. Next question. What do Herod the Great, Peter the Great, Alfred the Great, Pope Leo the Great, and Catherine the Great have in common?
Same last
name.
Yeah, they're all great. Great. The Great. Yeah, it's a great title. I was curious how many people in history have that title. So, you always go to the internet for such things. And it's got to be true if it's there. And at least that's what Lincoln said. 105 monarchs had that moniker, the Great. 10 aristocrats have it, and 23 religious figures. The other thing they all have in common is, of course, their great humility. Father Bill mentioned last Sunday the guy who won an award for his humility, but when he showed up for it, they couldn't give it to him because he showed up. To be truly humble. One of my favorite cartoons. It's a convention of monks. You see them all there in their habits. And in the back, the very back, a guy's holding up a banner that says, "We're tops in humility." There are some who do aspire to be great. And in truth, all of us, to a certain extent, would like to be great or remembered or known that way. Not just being great at what you do, but just to be remembered as being great. We're not very different from the disciples who are on the road traveling with Jesus, having an argument amongst themselves about who is the greatest. And I've always wondered, what were they putting forward as evidence? Especially if you've read the Gospel of Mark. They're idiots. And even in this, Jesus has just told them that he's going to suffer and be crucified. And they're like, well, we don't know what he means, so let's don't ask him. They're stupid, and they're presented that way. It's a mystery to them. But they still have something to argue about. We're great. I don't know. Maybe I was the first one to follow him. Or maybe Matthew's saying, I gave up all that lucrative money to follow him. We gave up our fishing nets. I don't know what you would argue or what they had to put forward for their evidence. But it was, and I'm sure Jesus was obviously aware of what they were doing. But it's good to ask. Sigmund Freud was a brilliant man, and he doesn't get a lot of good press in the church. But it's been said of Freud by other psychologists, no one went down further, stayed down longer, or came up dirtier than he did. Freud, as you know, put forward the idea that lust for pleasure is the basis of all of our human behavior. We shy away from pain, and we go toward pleasure. And I'm sure that's partially true. But another psychologist, and so this is a good thing when you have a daughter who's a psychologist and she goes to school, you're paying for those books, so you might as well read them. Alfred Adler, he came somewhat after Freud, suggested that the most fundamental driving force in human beings isn't the desire for pleasure, it's the lust for power. Human beings want to be significant. We want to be somebody. We don't want to be a nobody. We don't want to die in obscurity. I mean, Little children growing up don't say, boy, when I grow up, I want to be a bootlicker. You know, I want to just be a yes man and not do anything and not ever be remembered for doing anything great. We all have aspirations to be somebody. We want our lives to count for something. We want to achieve something. And ultimately, we would like to be known for that. We would like to be great. Now, I think both men were partially right. We do shy away from pleasure, and we do shy away from pain, and we do want to go toward power. But it's not my place to promote either of their agendas, not Freud or Adler. But there is something about what Adler said that I think has a lot to do with our gospel lesson. It's that individual yearning for significance. We want to be great. Not necessarily, I mentioned right after prayer, that Muhammad Ali, if y'all remember him, if there was ever a book that you wanted to write that would be very short, it would be called The Modesty of Muhammad Ali. Yeah. I am the greatest. I am the greatest. But we want to be great. We want to hang out with important people. We want to, we would all like to have big jobs. We'd all like to earn big salaries so we could have a big house and big car and all that. But it's not just true for us. It's true for all human beings throughout history. It's part of our DNA, I think, or at least the DNA of a fallen world. Not necessarily the way God created us to be. But we shouldn't be surprised nor condemn the disciples for what they're doing. They're having a discussion that we could have jumped into. I could have. But it's amazing that they would get into this discussion in the midst of what their master was teaching them about his impending suffering and death. So how does Jesus respond? When he gets them in the house, he asks them about that. And then he takes a child. A child. An object lesson. Places the child there and then takes the child up in his arms. Whoever welcomes a child like this in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. And I was thinking, the first time I read this, not ever, but I mean this week in preparation for the sermon, when I was reading this, I thought, man, this seems almost like a non sequitur. Here, we're talking about humility, first be last, blah, 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 and then he picks up a child and says, whoever welcomes such a child. What an odd thing to do. Why a child? Was he trying to break their concentration and come up with something cute to do? Or what? You know, it's always fun to pick up a child. Family was gathered yesterday for my father-in-law's funeral, and a daughter shows up with her baby. That baby never was not held. For all the hours everyone was there, that baby was passed around and around and around. She may be spoiled. But what was it? Unless you become like children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven, like Jesus said in Matthew. No, that's not it. He's not saying be like this child. That's not it. What's the point of the child in this lesson? The child is not great. In the society in which Jesus was teaching, children were weak, vulnerable, needy. They contributed nothing to society. They were supposed to be out of sight, out of mind, and quiet. But it wasn't that way for Jesus. Jesus had, unusual for a rabbi, unusual for anybody, he's got children around him all the time. Every time he needs one, he just reaches over and picks one up. Need an example? Oh. He got them.
We have them handy.
Yes. And if you go back to the first of the gospel, Jesus is traveling. I enjoy mysteries sometimes. And the mystery for me in this is, where did that kid come from? Because they are traveling, not wanting to be noticed. Jesus is trying to stay away from the crowd so he can teach his disciples. And then while he's teaching them, there's a kid. Where the heck did this kid come from? Whose is it? I don't. Jesus? I mean, it's like, yeah. Hey, Rocky, why should we pull a rabbit out of my hat? You know, kid! Where did this child come from? And then that led to me looking at how Jesus, you know, how do you envision this in your mind? You know, you think of Jesus traveling with the disciples, 13 guys going down the road. No. There's an entourage of people that go with Jesus everywhere he goes, whether he's in the city or whether he's out. There are children. There are women. Scandal. Rabbis aren't supposed to talk to women, and there they are. Look at some of the other things Jesus does. Touches lepers. Touches dead people. Of course, he raises them to life. I guess that counts for something. Who is Jesus hanging out with? It's the least, the lost, and the lonely. It's the people who are rejected in society and the people who don't matter. And that's not the way to become great. Jesus should be hanging out in Jerusalem with the priest and the rabbis and all the prominent peoples. He should be there with the Pharisees, and he is with some, of course, Nicodemus. But if you want to be great, you got to be with the wealthy. You got to be not around these people. Jesus calls us to his ministry. The ministry to the unimportant, to the outcast, to the victims, to the oppressed, to the people who've been rejected by society or ignored by society because they're not important. Now, if you want to be great, you go around, over, and maybe step on these people to get to where you want to be so you can be with the important people. But when you look at this story, obviously, Jesus is showing us what's great in the kingdom. The first will be last, and the last will be first. Sound familiar? If anyone wants to be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. That's not the way to get ahead. That's not the American dream. But it is your call. It's the call that Christ has placed upon each of our lives. The least, the lost, and the lonely. Yesterday, at my father-in-law's memorial service, there were a lot of Moravians and Moravian ministers who had come up and got to talk to a lot of them. Some of them I knew from when I had a church in Winston-Salem. And so we're talking, and there was one pastor there from a church called Pine Chapel, which was a church, the last church that George served. And it is a teeny tiny church. And I always wanted to ask, because that teeny tiny church is four blocks from the largest Moravian church, Advent. Most beautiful. If you're ever in Winston-Salem, you should go there and look at the stained glass windows. It's just an awesome church. Huge, big, impressive church. And four blocks away, this one. And so I had never asked. I said, why are there those two churches so close together? And one's massive. And so, well, the massive one's been there forever and a day. And it was the church, aside from the one in the historical part of Salem. And he said, they built that church. They built Pine Chapel. They built it for the mill workers to go to, because they didn't want the mill workers coming into their church. And I thought, how not nice. Yeah. Instead of you coming to worship over here with us, we'll build you a little church over here that you can go to. And that's moving it from our individual call up to the level of a congregation. Was that what Christ really called them to do? No, that was for their own comfort.